please open your Bibles to 2 Chronicles chapter 26. 2 Chronicles chapter 26. I've mentioned this a number of times. I hope I don't become monotonous with it. Not everybody shares my enthusiasm for this period of history. But there are so many lessons to glean from this portion of Old Testament history, and I appreciate your interest in it. That's obvious from your preparation, your reading the text, and your participation in the class. That's helpful to me. 2 Chronicles 26. Well, in our study of 2 Chronicles 26, most all of you have been in our authority class at one point or the other, and we have talked about King Uzziah and the mistakes that he made, and we have compared the accounts now from the account of the kings, where he is called Azariah, yes, and then, of course, in the account in the Chronicles, we see him identified as Uzziah. Now, we've talked about Uzziah in our study on Sunday morning, so I don't want to reiterate everything that we've had to say about him, but we do know that he was a good king for a period of time. There were many reforms that he was responsible for. He fought many of the enemies of the nation of Israel, and we know that he warred against the Philistines and the Ammonites, the text tells us in verse 8, came and gave tribute to him. So he was held in honor by those who had been enemies of the people of God. But, you know, sometimes it's just not a good idea to read your own press release, is it? Sometimes when you find out what a good fellow you are, it goes to your head and things begin to get worse in a hurry. And that's the case with King Uzziah. We know that there was a time of prosperity, and we talked about that. We know that during the reign of King Uzziah, the people at least appeared to be faithful to God. They gave lip service, as we have on the board. We know that he built a very strong army, beginning in verse 11, but in verse 16, we saw him become very arrogant. You'll note in verse 15, it tells us that his name spread far abroad. And you also see that, or a similar statement, in verse 8. The Ammonites gave tribute to Uzziah, and his name spread abroad even to the entrance of Egypt, for he waxed exceeding strong. This tells us about the king, but it also tells us that often success builds or breeds arrogancy. And that was the case with Uzziah. In our study, we've talked about what Isaiah attempted to do, and we know that he went into the temple, desiring to burn incense unto the Lord. And he did that, the text tells us, when he was strong, his heart was lifted up, verse 16, so that he did corruptly, and he trespassed against Jehovah his God. He went into the temple to burn incense upon the altar of incense. The maps that we have before us show us much of the empire during the time of David and Solomon. And then we see how that a great deal of that had been lost by the time that we get to King Uzziah. So the fact that there were reforms during the time of Uzziah ought to impress us. He fought against these enemies and expanded some of the borders of the land of Israel. But as we look at Uzziah as a young man, go back just for a moment and notice how old was he when he became king? 16 years old. Yes, 16 years old. How would you like to have the responsibility of being a king? Christopher, let me pick on you for just a minute. To be a king of an empire at 16 years old. Do you think you'd rather be, maybe 70? Probably not. How about 45? A little younger? Well, Christopher's probably seeing 45 is old. How about 30? Probably good about that. Well, my reason for asking those questions is this. When we see just how young Uzziah was when he became king and see the great things that he did as a young king, we can't help but be impressed. But as Uzziah became old, here's when he began to mess up. Now let me ask you, do we see that today? Do we see vim and vigor, enthusiasm and soundness often in the part of younger men? And then sometimes when we get old, there's just not any fight left. And we compromise. We're not what we once were. Now that's not always the case. It wasn't always the case with the kings of Israel. But it was the case here with this king, the king of Judah, Uzziah. As a young man, he had power and position. Who was his father? Now, as we talk about the kings of Judah, we've got a succession that goes all the way back to where? To David. That's right. So Uzziah can trace his heritage back to King David. And he is the honorable king of a very honorable empire. So he was born to a place of position and power. He was a descendant of Rehoboam, and he became king at just 16. His father served the Lord, though we note in 2 Chronicles 25, he did not serve the Lord wholly. Well, that tells us perhaps why that Uzziah, though he started out with great guns, he didn't end up where he needed to end up. He got off to a great start, but let's look at him just a little bit older. As a very powerful king, what did he do? In verses 6 through verse 15, we've already talked about these verses and read them. We've noted that he warred with the Philistines. He warred with the Ammonites to the extent they have been subdued and pay him taxes or tribute. We read verse 8 where his name has spread even to the entrance of Egypt. In verse 9, we talked about the building of the towers. Remember, as we used the idea of a fort to describe what these meant. And then we talked about how that he had very skillful, what we would call engineers, to build weapons of warfare at that time that were perhaps considered to be the most modern weapons that would catapult arrows or stones on the enemies. And so these were things that were really good. Politically, he was a strong political figure when you consider just how far his reputation had passed. His military advances, we've noted. And personally, his fame had spread. But now let's look at him. Here we see after his heart was lifted up, he's a rebel. He's disobedient unto God, full of pride. Even though his name had spread abroad, he's not what he needs to be. We know that the priesthood had been ordained of God. Who was to be priest? The Levites. Now, we hammered this, I think, sufficiently so, but I want to hammer it again, just to kind of clench the nails. Who was Uzziah when it came time to offer any kind of a sacrifice or to burn incense or any service in the temple? He was absolutely nobody. We talked about how that even the Lord couldn't do that. He was not from the tribe of Levi. The Lord was of the kingly tribe, the tribe of Judah, as was Uzziah, but not authorized to serve in the capacity of being a priest. Now, in our previous studies, when we look back into 1 Samuel chapter 13, tell me the story. Tell me the story, Bruce, of what King Saul did. And how that he was instructed to go and wait in Gilgal. And Samuel would come and he would offer an offering. What did Saul do? All right, he wanted to serve in the priestly capacity. He started to burn or started to offer the offering before Samuel arrived. And he was not authorized. We discussed at that time whether or not Samuel was a priest, and we noted that he was. He was authorized to do this, and Saul was not. And, of course, Saul in the 15th chapter ultimately disobeyed God and was rejected as being king. Here we see there were consequences to what Uzziah did. He became a leper, beginning in verse 19. Now, it's here that we very hurriedly
finished our study Sunday morning, but we noted that Uzziah became angry when he was rebuked by the priest, verse 19, and the leprosy began to break forth in his forehead before the priest in the house of Jehovah beside the altar of incense. And Azariah, the chief priest, and all the priests looked upon him, and behold, he was leprous in his forehead, and they thrust him out quickly from thence. Yea, he himself rather hasted to go out, because Jehovah had smitten him. And Uzziah, the king, was a leper unto the day of his death, and dwelt in a separate house, being a leper, for he was cut off from the house of Jehovah. And Jotham, his son, was over the king's house, judging the people of the land. Now, picture that, if you will. Here's a man who has made it to the top rung of the ladder politically and militarily and as far as his leadership ability is concerned. But now he is a leper living in a house by himself. According to the law, lepers had to be separated. And that included this man. Though he was king, he had to be separated. Now, running the country, he couldn't do. Can you imagine running the country, but you can't be in the presence of anybody? Well, you can't do that. So his son had the responsibility then of serving, judging the people of the land. Now, verse 22, familiar text, tells us, now the rest of the acts of Uzziah. First and last did Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos, write. So Uzziah slept with his fathers, and they buried him with his fathers in the field of burial, which belongeth to the kings. For they said, he is a leper, and Jotham his son reigned in his stead. Two things I want us to look at here before we talk about Jotham. One of the things that I want us to talk about here is that what Uzziah is remembered for. We talked about this, I think, in our closing remarks Sunday morning. Sometimes we put on a tombstone something that we want to be remembered about the person that has passed from this life. But Uzziah was remembered as a leper. He is a leper. Well, that's one of the things. A second thing I want us to note here and look for in further studies is the burial place of people who have died. Have you ever considered the significance in Old Testament history in particular of the burial place? Now, in our studies back, it's been some time ago, we talked about Jacob and Rachel and Leah and the story that's attached to them as we read of the beginning of this nation of Israel. And we noted that Jacob loved Rachel. But as we talked about Rachel, we noted that she couldn't have any children. And when she finally had a child, his name, of course, was Joseph. And when we talk about her attitude about bearing children, it was bitter. She blamed Jacob for her inability to have children. And he said, who am I, God? He was angry with her. Well, names meant something back in those days. When she named the son Joseph, what did his name mean? You remember? Another son. And naming him, she stated her dissatisfaction with what she had. She wanted another son. And then time passed. And you remember how that Leah was not loved, but yet she had four sons. Just boom, boom, boom. Boom. One more. One more. And when she had those four sons, what was Rachel's reaction? She was angry. But when Joseph was born, Leah continued to have children. She had later two more. And the names of children during that time meant something. Leah started out naming her children with the idea that now he will love me. Now he will love me. And that was the meaning of the first few boys' names. But then the next to the last, I believe, and I can't tell you his name, but I can tell you the significance of it. It indicated honor. She wanted to be honored. She's pretty much given up on the idea that her husband is going to have the affection for her that he has for Rachel. But she does ask to be honored. Now, the thing that fascinated me when we were studying that is the events of Rachel's death and where and the events of Leah's death, and where? Where did Rachel die? Yes, beside the road. That's where she was buried, basically where she died, beside the road. Leah, where was she buried? Cave of Machpelah, that's right. She was buried with the fathers, Abraham and Sarah, as it were, Isaac and Rebekah, and then Jacob and Leah were buried in the cave of Machpelah. And so her request to be honored came true. Now, when we study about these kings, I want you to train your mind to look for that. It's stated frequently. When we come to the end of the reign of a particular man, it tells us what happened to him. That he died or he was killed, and either he was buried with the fathers or he was buried in, as in the case of the kings of Samaria, here or there. And that's one thing that we want to note in our study. When we look at the kings of Judah, look especially for that, and you'll note that there was some in the list that it tells us they were not buried with the fathers. I think that's interesting. So you look for those things as you study. But just that as a side note here, let's get back to our study of Uzziah and these subsequent kings. When you get the list before you one more time, we've got the kings of Judah listed on the board. We've got the kings of Israel listed on the board. And again, I want to call your attention especially to your lesson book. When you look at your lesson book, now we're on pages 112 and 113. Notice, if you would please, the dots, little circles, that indicate the ending of a dynasty. That is, you've got subsequent generations, the ending of a dynasty. And also, I want you to look at the time frame when each king reigned. When we look at our kings of Israel, the next one that we want to talk about is the king Zechariah. When you look at this man's name, you'll note on page 112 that he became king in the 38th year of the reign of King Uzziah. That's very significant to our study because it tells us that Uzziah, how many years did he reign? 52 years. Yes, 52 years. So it tells us that we're approaching the end of King Uzziah's reign at the time that Zechariah becomes king. Now, one of the things that I've tried to do is to emphasize the text that we're studying from in red. And I want you to turn in your Bibles to 2 Kings chapter 15. We're now talking about the kings of Israel. Good king, bad king. Bad. How do you know that? First off, he's king in Israel. That's right. All the kings of Israel. That's an easy question, isn't it? All the kings of Israel were bad. Bad kings. It's just a matter of degrees of how bad. But as you begin in the 8th verse of the 15th chapter, it says, in the 38th year of Azariah. Who's that now? That's Uzziah. That's right. In the account of the Chronicles. Azariah, and by the way, I have forgotten, Richard, if you want to take the time to do it, you may. I looked it up, and I can't tell you. It seems like it was 29. I'm not certain. How many times the word Azariah is used, and I didn't look to see carefully just how many different characters are called by that name. But I believe it's used about 29 times thereabouts. And you can go and look at those if you'd like. But what I want you to see is that there's more than one character that has this name. But the one that we're talking about here is King Uzziah, who was king in Judah. Now, in verse 8, as it continues, in the 38th year of Azariah, king of Judah, did Zechariah, the son of Jeroboam, reign over Israel in Samaria 6 months. Now, we've already studied about King Jeroboam. In fact, we've studied about two kings by the name of Jeroboam. Jeroboam the first, and then as we refer to him, and I don't know what that's doing, Jeroboam the second. I went right back to the first slide. Maybe my Bible laying on it might have something to do with that. I accidentally pressed a button. Okay, that's got us back where I want to be. All right, Zechariah. Let's look at our Bibles, if you will, just a bit. And it says in verse 9 that he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, as his fathers had done. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, wherewith he made Israel to sin. What did Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, do? He brought in the golden calves. This was the first Jeroboam that ruled over Israel when the kingdom divided as a result of the poor judgment of Rehoboam. So now we've got a man who is worshiping idols. Worshiping idols. If you read on down in verse 10. One other thing I wanted to look here in verse 10. It says, "And Shalom, the son of Jabesh, conspired against him and smote him before the people and slew him and reigned in his stead." One of the things that we've noted, especially over here when we're talking about these northern kings, is if you want to be king, what do you do to the man who is king? You just kill him. Yeah. And obviously you have a following and you kill him and now you get to be king. Well, Zechariah was not king very long. It tells us 6 months, and then Shalom became king. Notice, if you would please, as well, that accomplished a couple of things. One is, it accomplished the beginning of a new dynasty, and it accomplished the fulfillment of the prophecy, and I'll go back to that, the prophecy of 2 Kings chapter 10, verse 30. Now, you remember that God had determined to use Jehu, king of Israel, to do three things specifically. What were they? Three things. Jehu had the responsibility of accomplishing three things, specific things. Now, generally, you might put a big category up here and say one thing. What was Jehu's job? Yes, deaths. He was to execute anybody that was the descent or the family, the house of Ahab. Now remember who Ahab was. Wicked old Jezebel was his wife. Ahab and Jezebel. And Jehu was appointed by God to kill all of the descendants, as it were, of Ahab. Now, he did that when he killed... Well, yes, he killed Jezebel, run over with the chariot and dogs ate her, and then... Who else did he kill? I like that part of it. Who else did he kill? Jehoram and... Starts with an A. Ahaziah, yes. Ahaziah was the son of... Yeah, the other Jehoram and Athaliah. We're all straight on that, right? Yes, he killed both of them. And that... ended. Of course, the king of Judah was king through Athaliah. And that's why that was done. But that ended the house of Ahab. Thank you. Now, God said to Jehu, because you've done this, but Jehu had done some bad things too, but God said, I'm going to spare you to the fourth generation. Well, count them up. You know, when you've got Shalom killing Zechariah, how many generations were before that? Four. Isn't that amazing? So exactly we see Shalom fulfilling the prophecy of 2 Kings chapter 10, verse 30 is where it is. And then let's move on just a little bit, get back to our kings over here, and talk about this man, Shalom, who killed Zechariah. That takes us to 2 Kings chapter 15 once again. 2 Kings chapter 15. We noted verse 10. Look at verse 11. Now, the rest of the acts of Zechariah, behold, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel, which was the word of Jehovah, which he spake unto Jehu, saying, thy sons to the fourth generation shall sit upon the throne of Israel. And so it came to pass. I like those things when you read of the prophecy and then you see it fulfilled, reference being made to it. It's done, just like God said. Now, verse 13. Shallum, the son of Jabesh, began to reign in the 39th year of Uzziah, king of Judah, and he reigned the space of a month in Samaria. Well, we got some long livers here, don't we? Folks who become king and reign for 6 months, some who become king and reign for a month. Very short terms. What happened to this man? Well, read on, verse 14. It says, "And Menahem, the son of Gadai, went up from Tirzah and came to Samaria and smote Shallum, the son of Jabesh, in Samaria and slew him and reigned in his stead." Now again, if you want to be king and you don't like the fellow that is king, what do? You kill him and you get to be king. And that's what happened here. And so Menahem killed Shallum. And just as Shallum began a new dynasty, now we see that Menahem begins his own new dynasty. Okay? Yes.
Makes you wonder about the security force.
It makes it sound so easy. Yeah. Kill the king. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it gives some perspective on the expression, "Long live the king," versus "kill the king."
Somebody lets you in.
Yeah. 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 Somebody gives you an in.
Surrounded by friends.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the case. So we've got another new dynasty starting, and you're going to be tired of this chart, I would imagine, by the time we're through with it, but we're working on it. Menahem. Let's talk about him just a little bit, picking it up there at verse 14. Very cruel. We know that he fought Tirzah and Tarzah because, and I thought this to be a very interesting expression, because they opened not to him. What's that imply? Pardon me? They were against him, yes. They just weren't very receptive to him. They opened not unto him. And so, that's in verse 16. And so what did he do? He did. Yeah, he ripped them up. And we think of that as extremely cruel, and it is. But that was a part of warfare during those days. I mean, if you're going to stop the growth of people and cause them to think twice about their conduct or their reception of you, you kill the pregnant women and you've stopped the seed. And so that's what was done during those times. Now, yes?
Well, it says they did not open it to him.
When I read that, Randy, my understanding was they just weren't very receptive to him. Tirzah was a city, and Tipshah, I believe, was a city as well. Tirzah, you may remember, was the capital of the northern 10 tribes before Samaria became the capital.
Well, we see earlier on in history when they were talking about distributing the land to the people and giving them cities, and some, there were suburbs to all of
right.
these things. So all of these little, in this instance, city-state type things, they not only had their own city, but they had their suburbs and the areas that they controlled.
Right.
That's what he's talking about when he says the borders there are.
Right. Well, that's probably so, yeah. They wouldn't receive him. Wouldn't be dominated, I suppose, by him. Jenny?
I switched to a different version
of
my Bible to the English Standard.
Okay.
A couple of things I wanted to point out. In verse 14, it says, Menahem came up from Tirzah and came to Samaria. So it seems that he was living there.
Okay. Okay, Emily?
And in the New King James, I have Tirzah did not surrender.
Okay, they just wouldn't be ruled by him. Right? That's the idea, I think. That's interesting. So he retaliated. As you pick up the reading there in verse 17, it says, in the 9 and 30th year of Azariah. Now, who's that? That's Uzziah, yes. King of Judah began Menahem, the son of Gadai, to reign over Israel and reign 10 years in Samaria. And he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah. He departed not all his days from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, wherewith he made Israel to sin. What's that tell us about Menahem? Calf worship, yes, idolatry. It says, there came against the land Pul, the king of Assyria. And Menahem gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver, that his hand might be with him to confirm the kingdom in his hand. And Menahem exacted the money of Israel, even of all the mighty men of wealth, of each man 50 shekels of silver, to give to the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria turned back and stayed not there in the land. Now the rest of the acts of Menahem and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? And Menahem slept with his fathers, and Pekahiah, his son, reigned in his stead. Well, I want to call your attention especially to two things. One is that Israel is now being invaded by the Assyrians. Do you see that? Secondly, we want to note that Menahem is exacting taxes, as it were, enormous amounts from those men of wealth in Israel to essentially pay off Pul, the king of Assyria, to leave us alone. Make it appear that there was some kind of camaraderie between Menahem and Pul. Well, that was not the case. Pul was just greedy, and he paid him off, and he backed out. But he didn't back out forever. We're going to notice that Assyria went ahead with their obvious intent and plans. Now, we've noted the prophets during this period of time. We're going to talk about Isaiah, but I want us to remember that Isaiah, for the most part, prophesied to those of Judah. But we read about Hosea, and Hosea's comments in chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. Chapter 4, verse 1. Turn, if you will, and look at this, please. It says, "Hear the word of Jehovah, ye children of Israel, for Jehovah hath a controversy with the inhabitants of the land, because there is no truth, nor goodness, nor knowledge of God in the land." There's your sermon, Randy. There's no truth, there's no knowledge, no goodness, and no knowledge of God in the land. The next verse, it tells us, "There is naught but swearing and breaking faith and killing, stealing, and committing adultery. They break out, and blood toucheth blood. Therefore shall the land mourn, and every one that dwelleth therein shall languish. And the beast of the field and the birds of the heaven, yea, the fishes of the sea, also shall be taken away. Let no man, yet let no man strive, neither let any man reprove, for thy people are as they that strive with the priest. And thou shalt stumble in the day, and the prophets also shall stumble with thee in the night, and I will destroy thy mother." What's God through Hosea saying is going to happen? What's about to take place? Yeah. Harsh judgment. That's exactly right. In verse 6, he said, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." They don't know. Well, we've noted in verse 1, there was no truth, nor goodness, nor knowledge of God in the land. Why not? Hadn't been taught. That's right. They didn't want to know. Weren't interested. Now, we can do that today. I mean, we can come to the same end just because we don't want to be taught, or we're not teaching. And ignorance exists, and the consequences are tragic. In verse 14 of the text of Hosea 4, it says, "And the people that doth not understand shall be overthrown." It would be timely for you to read the book of Hosea at this point. Be well familiar with the rebukes of Hosea. They're very graphic. In fact, you'll note that Hosea is described as being married to someone who has committed adultery. and children by this woman and his responsibilities to her and to the children that she would bear. And like I said, it becomes very graphic in what they were doing and what they were not doing and what they were not to do, as he becomes very specific in some cases. Well, that's so tempting to talk about. We'll discuss some of that, I'm sure, as time goes a little bit closer to their destruction. But Pul of Assyria later took the title of Tiglath-Pileser the Third. Yes, Joy. You mean to just come to the assemblies and just come to the Bible classes? That's not enough?
Well, you've got to do that and you've got to study. You, on your own. You've got to know the Word. You've got to study, or you'll drift away from Him just like they did that.
That's right.
And that's why we have that admonition.
That's right. That's exactly right. We know that in Old Testament times the law was to be read. But there was a time when the book of the law, and we've talked or are going to talk some about this, was lost. Yeah, covered with dust. It hasn't been read. People are not studying. And sometimes we can become guilty of that ourselves. Well, we know that with Menahem, we began a new dynasty. Here are our kings again. Let's drop down just a little bit further. We know that Menahem passes from the scene and get back over here to where I want to be. And we'll talk about Pekahiah in chapter 15, beginning in verse 23. Verse 23. There it says, in the fifth year of Azariah. Now, who's that? 50th year, yes, of Azariah. Who's that? That's Uzziah, king of Judah. Pekahiah, the son of Menahem, began to reign over Israel in Samaria and reigned 2 years. And he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, wherewith he made Israel to sin. What does it tell us about this man? All right, he's an idolater as well. He's not serving God, not faithful to the Lord in any respect. Let's go back to our list and pick up the next one. Pekah, beginning in verse 25. And Pekah, the son of Remaliah, his captain, conspired against him. You were commenting, Joey or Randy, about having an inn. Here his captain decides he wants to be king. Here's someone that had the opportunity to be in the presence of the king, conspired against him and smote him in Samaria in the castle of the king's house with Argob the Arioch. And with him were 50 men of the Gileadites, and he slew him and reigned in his stead. And the rest of the acts of Pekahiah and all that he did, behold, they are written in the books, or the book rather, of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. So, again, we see a wicked king, one that worshipped idols, made no effort to be faithful unto the Lord. But here we note that this man rebelled against Assyria. Now, one of the things we noted just momentarily, a moment ago, was a king trying to pay off the king of Syria to make it appear that there is an alliance going on. Well, in this instance, we don't have that. We've got Pekah that makes an alliance with the king of Syria for their mutual protection from Assyria, who is now on the horizon becoming the world power, or the dominant power of that part of the world. Let's drop down in our text just a little bit into the 16th chapter and pick up the reading at verse 1. Chapter 16, verse 1. It says, in the 17th year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, Ahaz, the son of Jotham, king of Judah, began to reign. 20 years old was Ahaz when he began to reign, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem, and he did not that which was right in the eyes of Jehovah, his God, like David his father, but he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, yea, and made his son to pass through the fire according to the abominations of the nations whom Jehovah cast out from before the children of Israel. Lots to be said about that. But in verse 5, getting back to Pekah, it says, Then Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, came up to Jerusalem to war. And they besieged Ahaz, but could not overcome him. And it came, or in time rather, or at that time, Rezin, king of Syria, recovered Elath to Syria, and drove the Jews from Elath. And the Syrians came to Elath and dwelt there unto this day. Again, I want to make the point that we have the formation of an alliance between the king of Syria and the northern 10 tribes to protect themselves against Assyria. And the instance that we just read, beginning in verse 5, there in the 16th chapter, we see that this alliance caused them to march on Jerusalem. But they were not victorious in that effort. And, of course, this begins a new dynasty. I have identified on the board before you Isaiah chapter 7. We've noted earlier that Isaiah prophesied to Israel during this period of the closing years of their existence. And in Isaiah chapter 7, in verse 1 and 2, the Old Testament prophet said, It came to pass in the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, that Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up to Jerusalem to war against it, but could not prevail against it. And it was told the house of David, saying, Syria is confederate with Ephraim. What's that telling us? Syria and Israel have formed an alliance. It says, And his heart trembled, and his heart, the heart of his people, as the trees of the forest tremble with the wind. Again, an alliance being made, and that's confirmed by Isaiah in the 7th chapter. Well, as they march on Jerusalem, is there an objective? Pekah and Rezin. Is there an objective? In other words, are they just simply trying to defeat Jerusalem? Yes, and what benefit would that be for Pekah and Rezin? Besides just territory. What else do you gain when you defeat your enemy? The tribute. What about soldiers? You see, you've got trade route. Those are good calls, but you've got soldiers. If you look at 2 Chronicles chapter 28, 2 Chronicles chapter 28, we see this got to be kind of a messy thing. 2 Chronicles chapter 28. You may not have time to discuss all this, but we'll begin at verse 5. It says, Wherefore, Jehovah his God delivered him into the hand of the king of Syria. Delivered who? And we're jumping ahead in the kings of Judah. Ahaz, yes, Ahaz, king of Judah, delivered him into the hand of the king of Syria, and they smote him and carried away of his a great multitude of captives, and brought them to Damascus, and he was also delivered into the hand of the king of Syria, who smote him with a great slaughter. For Pekah, the son of Remaliah, slew in Judah 120,000 in one day, all of them valiant men, because they had forsaken Jehovah, the God of their fathers. In verse 8 it says, And the children of Israel carried away captive of their brethren. Now this is out of the kingdom of Judah. They carried away 200,000 women, sons, and daughters, and took away also away much spoil from them, and brought the spoil to Samaria. Now, this gets to the heart of what you were saying, Lynn. You gain the spoil, you get money from the enemy that you have defeated. And hopefully the idea is you've gained some that's going to be reinforcements in your army. So here you've got, if you can picture this, Assyria on the horizon. It's growing, becoming a growing threat. You've got just to the south of that, you've got Syria, and then just to the southwest of that, you have the nation of Israel. And Syria and Israel are marching on Judah, trying to defeat them and gain what they have in an effort to oppose the Assyrians. Now, Assyria is not going to be opposed. You know why? All right. Because of what God said. Yes. We're getting close enough, I suppose, to the end of the reign of the northern 10 tribes to look at some more that Isaiah prophesied about. Turn, if you will, in your Bible to Isaiah chapter 10. Isaiah chapter 10. In Isaiah chapter 10, beginning in verse 5, look at your text. It says, "Ho, Assyrian, the rod of mine anger, the staff in whose hand is mine indignation. I will send him against a profane nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge to take the spoil and to take the prey and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. Howbeit, he meaneth not so, neither doth his heart think so. But it is in his heart to destroy and to cut off nations, not a few. For he saith, Are not my princes all of them kings? Is not Calno as Carchemish? Is not Hamath as Arpad? Is not Samaria as Damascus? And my hand hath found the kingdoms of the idols, whose graven images did excel them, of Jerusalem and of Samaria. Shall I not, as I have done unto Samaria and her idols, so do to Jerusalem and her idols?" Now you see the bold boast of the king of Assyria. Not anybody going to stand in my path. But what did God say about the king of Assyria? "You're just an instrument in my hand. You're going to do these things, and you're going to accomplish my will, though it's the farthest thing from your mind to serve me. But that's what you'll do. And I'm going to use you." Now, the question would normally arise, well, what about Assyria when God is done with them? Yes, verse 12. "Wherefore it shall come to pass that when the Lord hath performed his whole work upon Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, I will punish the fruit of the stout heart of the king of Assyria and the glory of his high looks. For he hath said, By the strength of my hand I have done it, and by my wisdom, for I have understanding, and I have removed the bounds of the peoples and robbed the treasuries, and like a valiant man I have brought down them that sit on thrones, and my hand hath found as a nest the riches of the peoples, and as one gathereth eggs that are forsaken, have I gathered all the earth. And there was none that moveth the wind, or that openeth the mouth, or chirped. I beat them up and took everything they had, and they didn't even have a whimper." Now, who did it? Assyria, king of Assyria, said, I did that. Who did it? God did it. All right, verse 15. Yeah. It is. There are a number of good questions that are asked in this section of our study. We'll start with that next time. Thank you. Continue reading. You have the outline in your book. Continue reading, especially, if you would please, the account of the kings. You might parallel that, if you would, to some things that Isaiah has to say. Isaiah chapter 37 and 38, I believe it is.